This is tape two of the interview with Don Stevens. When the last tape ended, we were talking about President Horton's selection.
Yeah.
And his interview and that sort of thing.
But yeah, we went to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. The whole board, you know, down there to meet with Horton. He came in with his wife, Dolores. And we had, and there's several other candidates. From different areas came in and were interviewed too. I can't just remember who they were. But anyway, it boiled down to a choice between Wharton and Soapy Williams, Governor Williams. And he wasn't governor anymore, but he had been governor for 12 years. And So there, prior to the meeting, everybody knew when the meeting was going to be. You know, they had, this is no kidding, I went to a meeting, and I was working for Gus Scholl, and they had a meeting of the state council, state labor council, and Gus was a very determined guy, and a guy that I admired very much, but I sure had disagreements with him once in a while. I was sitting up there right by him, you know, and he pointed at me, are you going to vote for Soapy Williams for president of the state, Michigan State University? I said, well, we'll look at it. If he's on the list of the committee representing university-wide people, faculty, students, the whole thing. And then we had the labor convention, and Gus arranged for me to meet, for me and Soapy Williams to go up to his room, meet. And so I talked to Soapy for about an hour, and I told him, I said, Soapy, if you're on that list at this university-wide committee that we've agreed to adhere to only choose a candidate that was approved by that group, I will, but if you're not, I'm not going to. You know, just the two of us. I was there, and I told him that. Oh, man. Well, he didn't get mad. I'll give Soapy Williams credit for that. He never said an unkind word to me. But I got pressure from Democrats from all over the countryside that you can think of. And let's see, there was another Democrat that voted with me, too. Who was it? Lance Martin, the dentist in Lansing.
He was on the board.
He was on the board then. He had been elected, and as a matter of fact, I got him to run because I wanted to boot another Democrat off the ticket that I thought was treating Hannah unfairly. And we had a, well, this is a side thing too. One time I had this Claire White, who I mentioned, who and Warren Huff and Frank Hartman. There were three Democrats, and the other two were Branch Martin and myself. And I'd got Branch Martin to run, and he was nominated at the convention, and I got enough support, you know, to do it, to keep him. And he, so when we got ready to pick a president, there were three Republicans. Stephen Nesbitt from Fremont, Michigan. He was with the Gerber Food Company up there. And Kenneth Thompson, who was from the Lansing area, and Frank Merriman, a farmer from over to Deckerville. So it ended up that the three Republicans, Branch Martin and I, voted, we got to the meeting, and one of the Democrats, it was Frank Hartman, I remember, so I nominated Soapy Williams. So I had to vote against him. Not only did I not vote for him, but I had to vote against him. And somebody else nominated Cliff Wharton. Maybe it was Branch, I don't know. But anyway, there was a 5-3 vote. The three Republicans, Branch Martin and me. Wharton mentioned that down there. the five votes, you know.
They put him in office?
They put him in office. He didn't, I remember he put it off. Don Stevens, Branch Martin, Stephen Nesbitt, Ken Thompson, and Frank Merriman. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying that down to that meeting that they had, that affair they had for him.
Mm-hmm. And, this is the convocation that the university hosted for the Whartons?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
I think October of last year?
Well, yeah, that's when you called my wife and said she was trying to get to me. And I did run. I didn't know there'd be so many people around, but I was busy down there talking to people all the time. Mm-hmm. Jack Stever. Do you know Jack Stever?
I've met him, yes.
Well, mm-hmm. Nice. I remember he came up to it. He and his wife.
Carolyn?
Carolyn, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was the ombudsman there at the university.
Mm-hmm. So when President Wharton came, that 5-3 ratio made it.
Oh, yeah. They did everything they could to make life miserable for him. Mm-hmm. But one other thing I want to mention, that when Hanna was still president, the three renegade Democrats were just up on him all the time. And Hanna, you know, I forget what they were after him for, he had a fellow that was treasurer of the university by the name of Phil May. And they figured that Phil May was using the university to promote his own interest or something. But I never felt it was anything worth squabbling about. But they were vicious on Hanna. They were coming out, and of course the student newspaper was carrying all kinds of stuff, you know, about Hanna and the three Democrats, Hartman, Huff, and White. Mostly the wildest one was Clara White, and just blistering Hanna. And anyway, I come out, you know, and I thought, well, I'm not going to stand for this crap anymore. So I issued a press release saying many things about Hanna, about how he'd served not only the university, about how he'd served the country. He had served under 5 presidents, Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. And that was in the paper, you know. Hanna wasn't here at the time. And then they organized a big rally, you know, around the university, and they asked me to come down and speak to it. So I went down, and I got on that stone, you know, I don't know if you know which one.
The rock.
Yeah, the rock, you know. I got up on the rock, and along with several other people, was defending Hanna. And I did. And of course, that got a lot of publicity. And we were sitting there, we lived out in Okemos, and we had a house out in Okemos. And we were sitting there during this hubbub, and Hanna come back, and he'd seen the paper where I had made this statement, you know, saying my support of him. He and his wife, by golly, they drove out there to the house, you know, and he said, hey, he wanted to thank me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting that you had a long experience in working cooperatively with Republicans in spite of some of the things. It sounds like it went back to Jerry Ford days and others.
Well,
you didn't fear the Republican Party as much as maybe some of the some of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, there's factions in the parties.
Sure.
The Democratic Party and the Republican Party, you have factions. I fought in the Democratic Party. Man, I had some of my most vicious fights were in the Democratic Party. I wasn't always on the winning side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Give and take. How would you characterize when you were chairman of the board when Dr. Wharton came? How would you characterize the mood on campus when he arrived?
Well, there were some groups that was trying to stir up trouble. But it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too bad. We had most of the damage around college campuses. It happened he arrived in what year?
1970.
Well, that was at the end of the, they were still having riots all around universities and so forth at that right. time. And I don't think there was any great demonstration against him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember any great demonstrations against him.
Students were protesting the war. Oh,
they protested the war in Vietnam, mostly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, I was against that war in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the controversies that Hanna did during that time, he wanted authority to expel students. He wanted authority to just... he was the sole judge, you know, whether a student should be expelled or not. That's how I happened to get up on the rock. Mm-hmm. You know, I spoke against that. I wasn't on this one. This one, I didn't agree with Hannah because I thought that they should go through a procedure, you know, before the student should have some rights, you know, mm-hmm. to defend himself. You might expel some real guilty ones, and you might expel a few innocent ones, just thinking that they're guilty. Mm-hmm. So that's how I happened to get up on that rock and to that rally, because the rally was called pretty much to support the action that that we were to against Hannah on that one, and. So, but anyway, it worked out all right. But you did have, and then I went over to the, I left the AFL-CIO. In 1970, when I ran for a renomination Democratic convention the last time, this is after the Soapy Williams affair and so forth, there was a big move on to block my, I wasn't too anxious to run again anyway. Mm-hmm. But when they started the big move to stop my nomination, I thought, to heck with that, I'm not going to be kicked off this thing. If I'm going to leave, I'll leave on my own free will. At least I'm going to try not to get kicked off. So I started a campaign. I went around to different unions. And I'll never forget, I went to the ASME, the State County Municipal Workers. And I went to their president. I knew him, Bob Grosvenor, and the local guy. And I said, look, I'm going to have some support up here because I know they're trying to boot me off. And even my people I was working for, working with, you know, they wanted to, that was a chance for them to get back at me, you know, for not making Soapy president of the university. So he said, yeah. He said, we're having a conference here, and the president, the international president, is going to be in town, and he'll be at that meeting, so you come down. So it was a funny thing. I went down to that meeting. It was a state meeting, you know, and Bob Grosvenor was there, and the head of the international union, God, I can't think of his name. But anyway, he got up, you know, and I'd never met him in my life. But Bob Grosvenor talked with him, apparently, because I was there, and Bill Marshall, who was vice president, then later become president of the state AFL-CIO, Bill Marshall was down at the end of it. He was on the group that was trying to boot me off, to stop my re-nomination. But what I was doing was going around to the unions, the individual unions who I knew for years, you know, and organizing support for myself. And I had a lot of people helping me. And Jerry Wirth was his name. Jerry Wirth was the international president of the state, county, and municipal employees. And he gets up and makes a big speech, you know, and, you know, what about me, you know, Don Stevens this and Don Stevens that, you know. And then, of course, I remember one thing he said, one thing about Don Stevens, he never forgot where he came from. And then there was a kid by the name of Jerry Kondrowski that was working for that union, working for Bob Grosvenor, the state branch of that union. And he jumps up in the middle of the platform, and he says, I move that we support Don Stevens for renomination to the Board of Trustees. And so that was a start. You know, I was over in Minnesota that year directing. I'd left the AFL-CIO because they never fired me, but I just didn't want to work under the conditions that they, after the pressure they had me on, not pointing Soapy and all that. I just didn't want to work under those conditions. So it's good to have friends in high places, but we come home, I'd had a conference in the Upper Peninsula, and we come home on Saturday night, and I didn't even have a job, you know. I come back from my last conference, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I got a call what the heck is that guy's name? Emil Starr. Who I knew through the years, you know, and I was education director of the state AFL-CIO. We'd have our conferences and our national conferences, and I got to know Emil Starr, among other people there. And I came back from the Upper Peninsula. We were sitting out there at our house in Okemos, and the telephone rang. I answered it, and it was, he always called me Donnie. He said, "Hey, Donnie." how'd you like to go to the University of Minnesota? And there was another fellow involved here by the name of Bill Kemsley, who had been on the AFL-CIO staff here in Michigan, but he left and went to work with the OEO, and he was in the Office of Economic Opportunity, and he was in Europe, you know, for quite a few years, trying to help rehabilitate those countries after World War II. And then he had come back, and he was director of the Office of Economic Opportunity branch in Appalachia. And he had talked with, he knew about the problems that I was having. And so your support will crop up when it's unexpected. And so he talked to Amos Starr, and he said, I understand they're looking for a guy out in Minnesota. So that's how Emil happened to call me. He said, hey, Donnie, how'd you like to go to Minnesota? I said, well, it sounds good. He said, well, it's got to be approved. He said, they've got a committee, you know, and they got about a half a dozen guys coming in. They're going to interview. But they want to meet you in Chicago on such and such a date. And so I said, okay, I'll be there. So I went over, and they did. They had, I don't know who the other people were, but anyway, I think it was all cut and dried before. But anyway, I was picked to head that Office of Economic Opportunity, and it was headquartered at the University of Minnesota, but it covered Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Indiana. I don't know why they jumped over Illinois, but they did. Mm-hmm. It covered those three states, so we had to go. She went to meetings with me over in Wisconsin, down in Indiana, and so forth. I was over there a year, and then I came back. I could have stayed longer if I wanted to, but then we'd had to move over there. And so do you know Bob Green here? Used to be at the universities.
I don't have him, but...
Yeah, well, anyway, I talked to Bob Green. I said, Jesus, I said, I hate to stay over there in Minnesota. We'd have to move over there and everything else. So he called up, he got a guy by the name of Bill Ford, who was with Michigan Employment Security Commission. He was a Republican, but he was a head of the Michigan Employment Security Commission, and he said, maybe I can get Bill Ford to look at you, maybe he'll give you a job. So he did, and I worked for him for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And then after the end of the second year, Oakland University, while I was on the board at Michigan State, Oakland University was established. First it was MSU Oakland for a few years, and then Woody Varner was a chancellor over there, we called him the chancellor, while it was a branch of MSU, and he wanted it to be a university of its own. And he talked to me about it, and he talked enough, and we supported him. I don't know how the board split on that, or whether it did split, might have been unanimous. But anyway, it became Oakland University. And I've had some people, you know, question whether or not, because whether it was a wise move or not to make it. But I still think it was a good move, because it's Oakland University has pretty much thrived, you know, through the years. It's gone on very well. I think much better than the several branches that the University of Michigan has in Flint and
Dearborn.
Yeah, I think they got three. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, but anyway, in Flint and Dearborn. And but anyway, that was that's how Oakland University became established. And Woody Varner then was over there for 2 or 3 years. He came up from Michigan State University from Nebraska, but he was appointed head of the State University of New York. And so when he went down there. Don O'Dowd, who was at Oakland University, was sort of his assistant over there, took over as president. See, then after they became a standing university, Oakland University, they changed. They didn't call him chancellor anymore, they called him president. He became the president of Oakland University. And
What year was it that you had the difficult, you had the difficult final election?
Oh, that was 1970. That was my last time I run, yeah.
Okay.
I mentioned the fact that I went to the state, county, and municipal employees union, and the international president jury were, got up and supported me, and I'd never met him in my life.
Uh-huh.
But he did it on the basis of what his local people had told him.
Uh-huh.
So I talked with several other people, and I called up, you probably know about Doug Fraser.
Yes.
At that time, Doug Fraser was vice president of UAW.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Chris. This is my grandson.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Hey, Grandpa.
Good. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Real good.
Good. Hey, I just want to turn. Mom!
When the tape stopped, we were talking about the 1970 election and how you had a tough time getting support.
Oh, yeah. And the first trip, I was over in Minnesota, so it wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd come home weekends. I'd drive home one weekend and fly home the next. And they agreed that they would, when I took a job over there, the one I mentioned, the Anal Star helped me get. And the director of that program, his name was Jack Flagler. And he was pretty good, you know. I'd fly, and you know, I'd have to buy my own ticket because they wouldn't pay for me. Pretty. But I'd come home one weekend and I'd drive home the next, and I know just how far it was, 603 miles from the university to where I lived out there. And well, at that time, we'd sold our house in Okemos. We lived up on Mount Hope, an apartment there.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was there. And we that was one of the reasons I didn't want to stay over there. They wanted me to come. First, I just agreed to go for a year, but they said, let's look at maybe staying longer. But I really didn't want to, because we'd had to, so we still had the house in Okemos.
Did President Horton support your candidacy?
Oh, yeah. President Morton, let's see, well, he was still, yeah, he was president then. Well, he didn't, he supported, but there wasn't.
Didn't actively campaign.
There was limits on what the president university could do.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we went up there, and I got this movement started, you know. First was, I called up Doug Fraser. And he said, well, I said, look, I said, I know what they're trying to do. I said I know what Gus and Bill Marshall and so forth are trying to do. They're trying to bounce me off because I wouldn't support Soper Williams for president. This is a few years back. And he said, well, he said, let me think about it. He said, I'll get back to you. And he wondered where he could reach me. And that time, as I say, I was coming back and forth from Minnesota. And I said, well, why don't I call you, because I'm hard to reach. He said, that's fine. So I called him in a couple of weeks, and he said, well, he said, I'll tell you what I've done. I've appointed a committee of four or five people, but he says, let me just say this. They lean heavily in your favor. And so that was a, see, the UAW's powerful force in the labor movement in Michigan. And then with the state, county, municipal workers, there was two big ones right there. So anyway, I helped that convention, and I was renominated. It didn't make me too happy with some of my friends. But anyway, I pretty much ran for re-election because I didn't want it left, but I was pushed off the board, you know, by my own people.
What was the end result? Did you win by a wide margin, or do you remember?
Pretty well, pretty good size. Pat Manigan. Kerrigan
mm-hmm.
was elected the same year.
Okay.
Her first term. It was my last. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe it was her only. I guess she served two terms.
She was from Ann Arbor at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
wasn't she?
She was from Ann Arbor. And, mm-hmm. and boy, I'm telling you, in those days, she was she was really a go-getter, let me tell you. She has her health problems, you know. And
mm-hmm.
She slowed down a little bit. Boy, I'm telling you, when I first knew her, man, she'd walk, you know, she could just stomp right over everybody, you know.
she was the first woman on the board, wasn't she?
Well, we'd had women on before. As a matter of fact, the woman, I'm trying to think who it was, it was a Republican. It'll come to me.
There was one other woman
that had been elected before her that I know of. Just stop listening for a minute. Mm-hmm. Let me think. Was elected, and she served, I don't know how long, on the board, at the State Board of Agriculture, as it was known in those days.
I see.
Yeah. And I don't know of another woman before Pat, but Pat was elected, of course,
mm-hmm.
and Pat was a terrific person, very mm-hmm. brilliant, very smart, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she was, as I say, she was elected there with me.
Could we talk a little bit about the unionization efforts, both of the faculty and also the staff at Michigan State? That obviously occurred while you were there. What accounted for the anti-union sentiment within the administration? Or did you? Was there any anti-union sentiment that you encountered? I mean, you're
well. let's see. There were several different unions. They had a union of the office and clerical employees. The group they call them, and then they had the grounds crew and those workers. And I never felt any great resistance from the administration to the unions. Now, one of the things that, in Michigan, in addition to Soapy Williams, another good governor, great governor in Michigan was Bill Milliken, William Milliken,
mm-hmm.
a Republican. He was elected lieutenant governor the last Romney term. When Romney went on to Washington and he became governor, and he was elected to 3 4-year terms, so actually he was on the board. He's longer serving, governor of Michigan, I think, in the history of Michigan. I'm not sure, but I'm almost sure that he is the longest serving governor in the history of Michigan. That is, in other words, he served 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 4-year terms in the last 2 years of Romney's. See, Romney was appointed by, was it Nixon?
So
one of the presidents.
HED, I think it was.
Yeah.
President Nixon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Health education and, yeah. William Milliken was a good governor, I want to tell you. Mm-hmm. He was a Republican, but he was a good governor. He still lives in Traverse City, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And Williams, those are the two, as far as I'm concerned, the best governors that, of course, I've had. And I remember governors going way back to the 30s. I remember Frank Murphy, mm-hmm. but he only served, I think, one term.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was appointed by Roosevelt as Attorney General and eventually appointed to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a great governor, but he only served one term because he moved back and forth those days to Frank Fitzgerald. The Fitzgerald family from the Grand Ledge out here. His grandson, I think, was it on the Supreme Court or something, just real up until recent years. And I think there's a Fitzgerald that's one of his descendants, I think, that is a. Now, some of them are off now because of term limits, you know. They used to be able to serve a long time. Well, because of term limits, they disappear, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did any of the MSU unions at that time look to you as for support, or did they?
Well, they didn't ask me. They were pretty reasonable. They knew that if they were going to organize a union, that they had to do it on their own. And I wasn't going to be an organizer for the union.
Mm-hmm.
I supported, of course, the movement, and. Well, I've in recent years, I'm not just sure how many of the employees are organized now, but I think quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Right now, there's an ongoing movement to organize the graduate teaching assistants.
Yeah, I've read about that.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's come up was the issue of faculty union, the faculty associates.
Well,
Dr. Phil Korth was the was one of the leaders of that union.
Do they have a faculty union?
No, not now. That was voted down. But I wondered if that, if there was any activism while you were on the board.
Yeah, there was movement and so forth. And of course, I would have if it came to a to an issue on the board, I would have certainly have supported their action. But I can't remember whether it would be becoming an issue.
That 5-3 ratio after Pat Kerrigan was on the board in terms of supporting President Wharton, that ratio continued?
Yeah. It was the people that were opposed to him, including the Democrats, Hartman, White, and Huff, they did everything in their power to make life miserable for him. And, But they were so unreasonable that they never gained much footage.
Mm-hmm.
Wharton, I'm telling you got to give him credit. You know, he would stand there. You know, I'll never forget Warren Huff. And I've been trying to find out how he is or whether he's still alive. I'm not sure, but I know Clara White's gone, Frank Hartman's gone, and I don't know if Warren Huff is still alive or not.
I believe he is. Pat Kerrigan indicated that he
is. Yeah, what did she say anything about his health?
She said he was still living in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, he had a place down in Ann Arbor. He had a farm up north someplace.
Uh-huh.
Where was I?
We were talking about some of the issues that came up and the opposition that President Wharton faced.
Warren Huff sat there, you know, at the meeting, and just come up like this, you know, and he had a book there, you know, and he just ripped into Wharton something terrible, and he ended it up, and he was a clever talker. He said, you know, you're running this university just like the people that put this book together. They got it bound upside down and backwards. And they ever, ever,